A whole lot of American agricultural products come out of California, and a whole lot of them are grown using pesticides. California has laws and regulations covering pesticides, as does the federal government. Those include rules to protect farm workers from the pesticides. But a study out of the law school at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, shows that worker protections are not what they could be. The research focuses on the role of county agriculture commissioners. The lead researcher joins us by phone. That is Timothy Malloy, a professor of law at the UCLA School of Law. Dr. Malloy, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. First off, is California perhaps somewhat ahead of other states in having legislation to address worker safety from pesticides at the state level?
Yeah, California is one of the most protective states in terms of both at the state level and the county level. So, you know, in most states, the workers and the residents would really have to rely upon federal law for the protection with respect to pesticide application. But in California, we've got our own set of regulatory agencies that are also looking at the pesticides.
Is California unique, for example, in having a Department of Pesticide Regulation, the DPR?
They're unique in having dedicated agency that looks at it. But one thing I should say is in California, it's really not limited just to DPR. So, for example, the Department of Agriculture is also involved in the regulation of pesticides. And one thing that's unique about California as well is that in the Cal EPA, there is a specific agency/department that focuses on environmental and human health assessment and provides supports to these different agencies. So it's actually quite a sophisticated network of agencies that are involved.
And as you point out, it comes down to the county level as well. Some responsibility falls upon the counties of California. What is supposed to happen and who is the effective agent at the county level?
Well, there's 58 counties in California, 56 agricultural commissioners who are charged with enforcing the laws at the county level.
I'm going to guess San Francisco County doesn't need one.
Is
that why there's 56 in the 58 counties?
Well, there's a few counties that are, there's a couple counties that are small, so they're combined. So the county agricultural commissioner covers two counties there.
Okay, all right.
I'm getting too specific. Sorry.
That was my question. So I'd have nerd land here for me. You know, it's like, hey, why do we only have 56 when there's 58 counties?
Hey, that's where I live in nerd land.
Thanks for the recognition, Timothy. So the county agriculture commissioners then are supposed to do something. What are they supposed to do? What is the task they're charged with as far as pesticide regulation goes?
Okay, so that's a terrific question. Can I answer it by just saying a word about what happens at the state level because they're related?
Okay, sure.
Sure. Okay. So when pesticides are first kind of, when a manufacturer wants to introduce them into the marketplace, the first thing that has to happen is the DPR, the state agency, registers them. So they take a look at them at that point to make judgments at a general level about safety and efficacy. And, you know, so the pesticide gets approved at the state level. But, you know, really a lot of the, what needs to be done in order to be safe is determined by what the local conditions are. You know, how windy is it? How close are you to streams? Who lives nearby? So for those kinds of decisions at the local level, you need somebody who's going to take what's been established as the general rules at the higher level and then determine how do we implement them here? What does it actually look like on the ground to take those general regulations and put them into play. And that's where the County Agricultural Commission comes in. So there's what's known as a restricted materials permitting process that has to be followed. So before a farmer or their consultant can apply a pesticide to a particular farm, they've got to go to the Agricultural Commissioner and ask them for permission and show that they're going to be following the rules that have been set in place by DPR.
And again, we're talking to Timothy Malloy, professor of law at UCLA School of Law, about a report indicating that there are the counties in California are not necessarily protecting people as well as they can from pesticide exposure. You're welcome to join this conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Before we get to the what's been going on with the county ag commissioners, give us some idea about the level of pesticide use in California, because you have some research that comes prior to this.
Well, you know, because the ag industry is such a major industry in California, you're going to expect that there's going to be, you know, a fair amount of use of pesticides. You know, generally speaking, we're a very heavy user of pesticides. Usually we keep track of the use by thinking not about the bulk amount that's being used, but rather about how many, how much in terms of active ingredients, the chemical, the chemical in the pesticide that is being used to kill or reduce the number of pests. So, for example, the latest information that we had from 2016 showed that there's, you know, just shy of 200 million pounds of active ingredients being applied in California. So that's a lot.
It is indeed. And now, so when you come down to the county agriculture commissioner level, one of the key findings in your research would be that it appears the commissioners do not include meaningful evaluation of safer alternatives, meaning not pesticides or less toxic pesticides or what?
Yeah, it means both. So, you know, dealing with pests is a difficult business. In the report, we weren't suggesting that, there should be a halt to the use of pesticides in general, but rather before applying some of the more toxic pesticides. So the case study we used in our report was chlorpyrifos, which is a highly toxic material. And in some places, its use has been banned, and EPA had considered banning it previous to the current administration. The point of the law is that, look, if you're going to be using toxic pesticides, one of the things you should do to protect people is to ask, is there something safer that I could use, either a less toxic chemical or even a change in how I'm doing my farming, so integrated pest management, or maybe, you know, planting different kind of crops in between the use of, the commodity crop that you're growing, so as to reduce the number of pests in the ground.
One of the things in the research also is that you say that the county agriculture commissioners do not effectively consider cumulative exposures. So can we assume that small amounts with frequent exposure are potentially as harmful as a few big exposures?
Yeah, this is one of the really concerning aspects of pesticide use. And this isn't just California, and this isn't just the county commissioners. Our regulatory structure is set up, the last line of defense is the restricted material permitting process, so it places a lot of obligation on the commissioners. But what we're worried about with cumulative exposures is when we think about how dangerous a pesticide is, there's some testing done, there's modeling done, and the risk assessors try to establish a safe level for exposure. That kind of makes a lot of intuitive sense, but they don't think about, if I apply pesticide A on, a given farm field, what happens if, the farmer next door also applies pesticide A the next day? Well, the folks who are living around that farm field and working in that farm field are exposed to twice as much, but nobody's looking to see, what is the total level of their exposure during that time period. That's one example. The other thing you worry about is that pesticides can have additive effects. So if in a pesticide application there's one chemical being applied and then there's a second chemical that gets applied, sometimes the sum of those applications can be a worse outcome, what we call a synergistic or additive effect, than, if you had just applied the same volume of a single pesticide.
We're talking about pesticide use on California farms and the effect potentially on California farm workers and the role of county agriculture commissioners in that process, examined by the UCLA School of Law. Timothy Malloy is the principal author of the recent research and our guest on the exchange. You can join in at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Is there a concern you have regulatory capture here? I mean, it makes sense that you want people who know the conditions on the ground to have a part in the process, which is why the county ag commissioners are involved. But is there a concern? Are you talking about regulatory capture here, where they live so close to the people that they're regulating that they're buds with them?
Well, I only want to speak to what we saw in the particular research. So, regulatory capture is something in law and policy that's been well demonstrated as a general phenomenon that you worry about. We didn't look to see if regulatory capture was an issue in this particular case. But what I can tell you is that thinking about, for example, the requirement that we need to consider alternatives before using, say, chlorpyrifos or other pesticides. What we did identify when we looked at the practices of the county agricultural commissioners was that they had delegated the responsibility for evaluating the possibility of alternatives and making the call about whether to use an alternative or the, you know, the original chemical. They had delegated that to the pest control advisors who are hired by growers. I'm not trying to suggest that those pest control advisors are doing anything wrong. The simple fact is we don't know what they do because there's no record keeping, there's no oversight as far as we can tell by the county agricultural commissioners. So if in fact we are committed to the notion that alternative evaluation is important, we're in a spot in California where we know that the government agencies aren't doing it, and we have no idea really to what extent the pest control advisors themselves are doing it and how well they're doing it.
So it sounds like it's more a case of deference than capture, where the county agriculture commissioner says, well, the pest control advisors say this is what works, so we're going to go with them.
Yeah, that would be my guess. And, you know, to be fair to the commissioners, again, this takes us back up to the state level. In the guidance that's been issued by the DPR, I mean, they essentially tell the commissioners that the first thing you look at is, can you mitigate the potential effects, you know, by using buffer zones or, you know, have the farm workers wear protective equipment or whatever. And only if you determine that those things won't work do you have to go look at alternatives. Now, that's not what the law is, and DPR has lost on that point in the courts in California. But it's hard to fault the county agricultural commissioners for following the guidance that they've been given by the state.
So Timothy Malloy, flip things around. Actually, before we even get to that, I just wonder if cannabis cultivation is a factor at all in what you're finding here.
No, it's not. You know, this our study was looking at agriculture, you know, from in the 2016 and mm-hmm. earlier, so we didn't really focus on cannabis cultivation.
Okay, so then that was one point I wanted to clear. But then, so let's talk about recommendations that came out of your research, that things that might happen to, because we're talking about protecting farm workers essentially from pesticides more than anybody else here, and from what you're finding, it sounds like they could be better protected. So what are some of the recommendations to make that happen?
Yeah, so before I get to the recommendations, I just wanted to emphasize another point, which is we're definitely worried about farm workers because they are the folks who are most close in and who are there the most time. But the concern is also about what we call bystanders, and those that would be people who live near the farm fields, or you know, kids who go to school or folks who go to work. And in California, depending on where you are in the state, that kind of urban agricultural interface is pretty prevalent. So you do worry about exposures to other folks. So let me give you an example why that's a concern. Coincidentally, I wasn't involved in this research, but there's other ongoing research at UCLA where epidemiologists are looking at, you know, women who live within, say, 2,000 meters of farm fields. And what they're finding is exposure, though women who are exposed to kind of the ambient air, that is the mixture of pesticides that have been used at various fields, are showing some effects in terms of, the one study that was most recently issued just in last month showed that there was an increase in terms of autism that you're seeing associated with women who live closer to these farm fields and have higher exposure to ambient pesticides, the mixture of pesticides in the air. So we're worried about farm workers, yes, but we're also worried about folks who live near farms. So what can we do? I think part of it is trying to get the state and the county level regulators to embrace and commit to looking at alternatives. So part of that is building capacity, developing the practical but protective methods that can be followed either by the county agricultural commissioners or the pest control advisors that kind of walk them through to make sure that they're looking at all the available information and making good decisions about the use of alternatives. And part of that would be at the state level, developing kind of easy to access clearinghouse of information about alternatives that can be used and under what circumstances. So to some degree, a lot of that's being done in other areas in California. So in the consumer product area, the Department of Toxic Substances Control has been developing guidance about how to do these kinds of alternatives evaluations. So seeing some crosstalk at the state level across agencies would be an important first step on the alternatives part of it. On cumulative exposure, you know, when you talk to DPR, usually their response is that, you know, the science just isn't there. It's hard to figure out what the cumulative effects are, so, you know, so they don't do it. And I think probably the best response to that is if you build it, they will come. In a sense, is if we take it seriously and you look around and see the various methods that are being used in other government programs and in other locations, it would be possible to start developing a cumulative exposure methodologies that will provide some basic protections now, while we're also making efforts to develop the science and get more sophisticated about what we do. So our major recommendation on cumulative exposure was to take the step to pull together folks from, the farms themselves, the regulatory agencies, academics who are doing research on how to do cumulative exposure, stakeholders like farm workers, the advocacy groups, and to form a task force that would be charged with identifying practical protective methods for dealing with cumulative exposure.
Okay, so a bunch of people to get involved in the process to make things better for people getting exposed to pesticides on California farms. This particular bit of research is titled Governance on the Ground, Evaluating the Role of County Agricultural Commissioners in Reducing Toxic Pesticide Exposures. It's out of the law school at UCLA, the University of California, Los Angeles. Timothy Malloy, professor of law there, has been our guest and is the principal author. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the time to talk about this important issue.
Take it easy.